Welcome to Two Bards, One Mic. Insert interesting music here.
I swear we're actually going to get music one of these days.
Nah.
171.
Wow, that might have been a little loud.
I cannot believe that we were able to keep this going on across the Atlantic Ocean.
I can't either.
I mean, America can barely keep up, you know, foreign policy across the Atlantic Ocean. So this is pretty impressive to me that we're able to do this.
Do you hear that, Donald J. Trump? Andy and I for the Transatlantic Board of Regents in your cabinet. Preferably your liquor cabinet.
The Transatlantic Bard Partnership is in full swing. we have zero sanctions, but we will fuck you up. I don't know, man. Maybe this is the way. You and I can have a partnership and use that partnership to allow Kinder eggs back into the U.S., right?
Yes. We'll
reduce Kinder sanctions. That's our whole platform. Reducing Kinder sanctions, allowing the free flow of chocolate-covered toy goodness back into the United States, where it frankly belongs.
That's
right. We invented the Happy Meal. All this is a Happy Meal shrunk down to a candy form.
Mm-hmm.
And no one has ever choked on them. It's someone being so freaked out that their idiot vacuum of a kid is just going to shove the egg in their mouth, and they don't want a parent. So instead, fuck it, let's ban Kinder eggs in the U.S. Stupidest thing ever.
Agreed. And we don't have to worry about making the Bardic Partnership great again, because
it's already
great, still great, and will continue
still
to
great.
Be
Hasn't
great.
Never been ungreat.
Correct.
Yes.
That's as American as it gets. Never having been ungreat.
Yeah. Full. But you gotta throw as many possible grammatical errors into that as you can. Or it's not American if you're not throwing in grammar errors.
Right. So. Spelled W R I T E.
Correct. Spelled with a K.
K. And two T's.
Indeed. Unfortunately, if you start smelling stuff with too many K's, the T's are on fire on a front lawn, so
I was going to say that it was a Welsh word, but wow, you trumped me on that one.
Oh snap. So anyway, I'll let you know a little bit about my week, and then we can get into yours, because yours was more interesting than mine. So I've been playing Zelda a lot. That has been my primary, when not working, function. I did get a stomach flu on Tuesday, which sucked.
Congratulations.
I had to go home early. It was one of those, like, the well was dry, but my body kept pumping.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just like, I sounded like a sick cat. It was gross. Though it's the worst, because it's like, you know, and I'm sorry if this is too much information, but I'm also not sorry if this is too much information, because it cracks me up. You'll heave a few times, right? And nothing will come out. And then like 20 minutes later, you'll expect the same thing to happen, but all of a sudden you've got a little bile and that gross, like, gelatin. Oh, it was terrible. I hate that shit. But it only lasted like 24 hours, so I'm good now. So don't worry about cleaning out your ear holes. I'm probably not contagious through the power of internet radio anyway.
Thank goodness.
Yep. Additionally, let's see. Started watching the OA, which it feels like it's going to be amazing, but it feels like you need to binge about halfway through to really, really love it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm very hopeful. But right now, it's episodes 2, 3, and 4 are kind of like a really weird "Are You Afraid of the Dark?" episode. Episode one's fantastic. Weird. Like, it feels off, and you're kind of worried about the performances at first until you realize it's not Lynchian, but there is this kind of, like, it's stylized on purpose. So once you get past that, you're like, oh, okay, cool. I'm down with this. And then it becomes a lot of sort of retroactive exposition. Have you seen it?
I have not. That's the one that you said is Netflix, correct?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Correct, it's Netflix. So I hope to have a real review of that soon, but I need to get through the whole season. Additionally, let's see. I talked about Logan last week. Still phenomenal. Didn't get to see any new movies. I was really hoping to get out before this podcast, but I was unable to. Which sucks, but oh well. The game 1-2 Switch that I was in got featured on Penny Arcade's First 15, so that was kind of cool. And out of the four games they played, three of them were ones that I voiced, so that was really cool. So that happened, and
what is a First 15?
Oh, First 15 is a brilliant thing that I wish we could do, where they take a video game and they play the first 15 minutes of it as a podcast or as a vodcast kind of thing.
Oh, cool.
Would be totally fun to do, but it's a little difficult considering the geographical distance between us.
Yes.
So I did have a couple. So all the interesting stuff is NDA'd. I'm sorry, guys. I had a meeting about the thing that I kind of alluded to having a meeting about last week. And it is getting, so it's happening. Like I said last week, it is absolutely happening. So some new gear is in my future, and that's going to be a really interesting thing. I will do a gear review when I get the whatever it is I'm getting. So we have that to look forward to. For you videophiles out there, it's camera gear for sure. So I'll let everybody know when I get that, and we'll go through a review. But then the movie that we're producing, very, very, very good meeting about that. Lots of positive things, and zero, literally zero, I can talk about. You know how it goes.
So. I do.
Aw, did we just get married?
We did.
Okay, good.
Cyber marriage.
Because cyber marriage. Hey, those were most of my marriages. Like, you know, going through. It's like that's how you get money in Warcraft, man. You cyber marry. Cyber marry young too. We're talking like level 10. Don't wait. Don't wait until you're a 60 to try and cyber marry. Ain't nobody want that. Yeah, and that's really about it. I've just been heads down in work. Something. Yeah, but I forget. So yeah, that's all I've done. This week is production meetings on something I can't talk about, and regular job in Zelda. And if you have any Zelda questions, please send them to me, because I would love to talk about that, because Scott will be completely and utterly out of his Zelda. He won't know what's going on, and those are the best, because you'll ask questions to me out of context, and it'll be a lot of fun. I think it'd be a great thing to do. But
I agree. It would be awesome. I like being in the dark, and that's most of the time, so that's perfect.
It's just because you work so late.
It is.
So you're always in the dark. Yeah. How was your week, Scott?
It's already tomorrow for me.
If that makes any sense. Oh, yeah, it is. It's tomorrow in 8 minutes.
Yeah, and I'm now on top of going to the gym 4 days a week for my physical training, which, by the way, the areas of my body that do not have a lot of fat on them are looking great. That means my back. We're making some really good progress, having changed things up. But now I'm also going to start going in the morning to do cardio so that Jen will be motivated to go to the gym as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Sorry, I'm a little tired. I think I don't know what it is. I've just been really tired lately. So
It's that it's after midnight, dude. Come on.
Well, that, yeah, could be that. So the week was, it was a good week. I did some work on, I started doing some work on a DG thing and then, quickly moved off of that project because it was outside of the scope of what I could do and everyone agreed. So I just cut bait on that about 6 hours into the project. And started to redo some stuff that I talked about kind of last week for Two Bards, but that's not done yet. Started in on another website for another person back in Seattle, getting that finished up. Did some updates to Mr. Connor Marks's website. Mm-hmm. And did a little catching up. We'll get to this on the backside. Started watching some new programs, but trying to get through the Iron Fist, trying to stick to my guns that this is a worthwhile project, and rapidly coming to the conclusion that the farther I go into it, the harder it is to watch the last two episodes. Because I just don't give a shit anymore. And it's really too bad. I also did watch the documentary I Am Your Father about David Prowse. And It is very interesting. I really want to get my hands on the footage that the guy shot. He shot the final scene of episode 3 with David Prowse. He got a special effects group, a makeup group, recreated the ship's ramp that Vader's on, because it's not David Prowse that you ever see. He's also never been invited officially by Lucasfilms to a Star Wars celebration. And it all stems from he used to talk to the media. And at the end of filming, like the last couple days, last week of filming episode 3, the Daily Mail newspaper over here reported that David Prowse said Darth Vader will die in this new movie. And, well, the article was something about David Prowse, and then somewhere in the article they said, we have found out that Darth Vader will be killed off in this movie. And Lucas thought that it was Prowse, and Prowse said, no, it wasn't me, and that's never been patched up. And in this documentary, they found the reporter, and the reporter said, absolutely not, David Prowse did not give us that. We got a phone call from set with this information. And It was still a very interesting documentary about, you know, a guy who has made probably the most iconic evil villain ever in cinema, who did it all without ever seeing him. He did everything with his body, voice replaced, everything replaced. So it was really good. I'm
kind of like Darth Vader.
Yes. And I'm looking forward to watching, because it is on Netflix, For the Love of Spock. So that is,
yes,
also on the short list.
I was a backer, so it was fun to see my name in there.
Oh, yay!
But two, it is fantastic. It is a great documentary, so highly recommended.
Yeah, I am looking forward to that. Been watching a lot of QI, which is like IQ, but Funny Take, hosted by Stephen Fry, and has panels. Sue Perkins is on from time to time. Brian Blessed was on the other day. so that, oh my God, Talk, and man. He is just as loud as I remember.
Well, he's also a superhero. I mean, the guy's nuts. He climbed Everest at like what, 60?
Yeah, he talks about all this stuff on his adventure and the Yeti and the abominable snowman and Sasquatch. Nice. And all this stuff that he believes in. And yeah, he's just awesome. But the highlight of the week was last night. So we went to see a little production that, walking around Manchester at some point late last year, we saw a billboard go up for Bat Out of Hell, the musical. And I was like, okay, this will be interesting. And I think it was around the time that we saw the Queen tribute band set. And I thought, okay, Bat Out of Hell, the musical, this is going to be, you know, Jim Steinman's songs, Meatloafy, it'll be great. No, this is like American Idiot on Broadway. There's a whole story set around not just Bat Out of Hell album, but a number of albums. Hands down, technically, the most amazing theater production I've ever seen in my life.
Wow, that's a huge endorsement.
Yeah, there's a review on the site for them, and it happens to be batoutofhellmusical.com. You can see some great images and stuff, and I've shot one to Andy so that we can reference it while we're discussing the amazing bits of the set. But they've taken and created characters in this fictitious, you know, post-apocalyptic city where the lost are young kids, never aging past 18, and they're kind of in the pipes and the gutters and down below, and then this utopian society above where everybody is the same, and of course dad's trying to protect daughter, yada yada yada. All of this, there were, I think, are three songs that Jim Steinman wrote that aren't on albums. Also, Bat Out of Hell was originally conceived as a musical 50 years ago, and was made into an album. There's some really interesting stuff in the liner notes. But basically, the set construction, the use of video, the use of having a cameraman on stage recording this and projecting on a screen that is half of the stage so that everyone in the audience can see what's happening, and not hiding this person, female camera operate, by the way, going through this. A lot of scrim work, which we've talked about before, which is a thin muslin sheet that, if front light is projected, it appears to be solid. Backlight projected, it is translucent. Mm-hmm. Two different levels of this being used. Visual projection on almost all surfaces. An entire section that was boxed in mirror. A subterranean water hole that was used on stage to pretty fucking amazing effect. A 57 convertible Cadillac gets pushed off the stage into the orchestra pit. Three different Harley Davidsons on stage. The audience was singing along while this was happening. I and the rest of the audience, when the last scene was done and the lights were coming down, everyone erupted and stood before the lights were completely off and before the curtain call. There was a minute and a half of applause in total pitch black before the cast came out. this thing was amazing. There was one plot point, unfortunately, the big linchpin for me, that was not done well. As Jen said, there were a couple actor moments that weren't great, but when I'm seeing a musical, I kind of throw that out the window. And everyone knows how much I love a musical. This was so technically astounding. I can't see anymore. Do you have that image that you're looking at, Andy?
I do.
Or that I sent you. I'm going to move it to my other screen so that it's not a quarter the size that it is for you. Oh, that's so much easier to see. Okay, so you see the main area where Strat, our main character, who is shirtless in the black pants, is holding the microphone. That little...
Yes, and
go ahead.
We are going to post this image, right?
Yes. I may so doctor it along with like section one, section two, so that people... No, you know what? No, I don't need to. It's quite self-explanatory. Right in front of him in the rock area, that's where the water is.
Okay.
And someone goes in there at one point. You can see one of the motorcycles behind him.
Yep.
Where the girls are dancing and the light is coming out of is a tunnel that can move forward so that you're in the subterranean area. Or be retracted into the wall, and you see the projected image behind it.
Yep.
Another piece will fly in and become a wall and hide everything behind it. Or that screen area gets flown out, and that is a playable area on stage that they can climb up into. It turns into the mirrored room. It's a cemetery. It's a couple other places. If you then look towards the right of the image, you see another ape hanger motorcycle in the back there. And then this angled tower, the middle section right under the FA is a scrim worked area that becomes translucent. And that is where the camera operator is, giving you the insight into that particular bedroom. That is Raven, our female protagonist. That's her bedroom. And there's some altercations between her and Strad and her father and mother. The interesting thing is that area up there seamlessly, and there were two points where I did not see the scene change, and I was in row T. I mean, I could have wadded up a piece of paper and thrown it and hit the stage. Jen got some really fucking fantastic tickets for this show.
Nice.
That area turns 90 degrees and drops down to the main stage. All of this stuff goes away and you are in this huge bedroom. That is an exact copy of the room at the top. And then underneath turns into a bar and a number of other areas. An entire prison cage is dropped into the center. And what is so amazing is that if you look at the set for Hedwig and the Angry Inch that NPH just did,
mm-hmm.
It would be a set very similar to this,
right?
But it would never change.
Right.
You might have different areas. So this entire section that has the red neon goes away. The entire section in the back that has the tunnel and the projection screen there, an entire piece drops in front of that. All of that is totally obliterated and obfuscated and hidden. And then we'll come back at other points. And the music was great. The lighting was amazing. The sound system, I mean, just booming in. My seat was vibrating on all the bass notes. The band was, I thought Jim was playing the piano. I mean, it was hands down. Act One, I was in tears probably four times. Meatloaf music for me has a real, I'm really surprised I'm getting through this description without breaking down. A lot of my life is tied up in Meatloaf songs, and that's really weird to say, and I'm not really going to say much more on it other than it is very meaningful and very impactful music for me at some times in my life where it was poignant. Jen likes to think of the song Two Out of Three Ain't Bad as, you know, I want you, I need you, but I'm never going to love you. Don't be sad. Two out of three ain't bad. And she sees that through an eye of, you know, not pessimism. What's the word that I want? Help me out here, Andy.
I'm not quite sure.
Well, stoicism, two out of three ain't bad sounds like a shitty song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, hey, you know, come on, baby. I want you and I need you, but I'm not going to love you. It's.
Are you looking for the word pragmatism?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's a pragmatic situation. It's like nothing can be perfect, and this is as close as we can get. So why should we give up something great for the idea of perfection? Let's be pragmatic about it.
Well, that's kind of the way that I take the song, because a kid who couldn't get the girl, who didn't have a lot of friends, who was, you know, the quintessential outcast, two out of three was pretty fucking good. So my take on some of the music was different than maybe what, you know, a younger man would feel. So, but the best part was they gave some of the hard hitting awesome songs to the ladies. They changed stuff up, so it wasn't, the songs weren't all sung by this one hero. There was he and Raven, there was Raven's mom and dad, there was a young boy. The Lost are all stopped aging at 18, and Tink, who is in love with Strat, stopped growing at 16, or stopped aging at 16, and was very frustrated that he'd never be there. He's in love with him, an unrequited love, blah, blah, blah. And then you had, God, I wish he was in this picture. African-American singer dancer who was extraordinary, and not a waifish, just a beautiful and huge red hair, huge. And she was sort of a, if you will, wet nurse for Raven. So she kind of slipped between both worlds of the Lost and the upper crust. I think you can see the friend. It's the third on the slanted rock there. That young black gentleman is in love with her, but she's kind of waiting for, you know, this isn't really going to happen. And she's got, there's a, I can't remember the song, Cher sings on, I think it's the third album. She gets that song. She gets one of the other songs. There's Heaven Can Wait. The three guys that are on that slanted rock each take a turn at singing one of the verses. Just so well put together, so well imagined. And I mean, I was just breaking down going, this is everything I could ever want of this music if it was to be portrayed in this format. And I know that Meatloaf was at opening night, which was the first of this month. So this show, here's the best part. This was originally mounted this month in Manchester.
Wow.
This
show, you got to be there, ground zero.
This show is going to London on the 8th of April. And this is moving straight into the West End. So this was like many shows that have left Seattle, Hairspray, Seattle and Fifth Ave do a lot of mounts before they go on to New York. But this was rehearsed here. It was born in Manchester and opened at the Opera House, and then it's going to the West End. It was sold out. It's been sold out for a while. And like I said, the whole place just blew up when this thing was done. We had at one point in the show, three ladies of an age 20 to 30 years my senior in the aisles dancing.
Nice.
If this comes anywhere near you, go see this show.
Okay.
That's done.
That's
everyone listening. Even if you don't like Meatloaf and his rendition of stuff, everything in here is its own unique. The singers are theirs. They're in the same range. It wasn't like someone doing a totally different rendition of this. This is Jim Steinman. He produced it. He wrote these songs. He's having this vision created and produced. The music is the music. You can't help but be moved by it. His words, he's the king of the power ballad. It was in Paradise by the Dashboard Light. I'm telling you, this thing was just staged immaculately, and I am super critical. But this is fantastic. And Jen will argue with me. She didn't think that it looked like it, but from where I was sitting, Raven looked like Lisa Coronado, and Strat looked kind of like Connor Marks. I'm going to, well, doesn't look like that. Oh, yeah. Go, I'm going to send you a link, Andy, and then everyone else can see this on the website. But that's the media link. And if you look at pictures, first row, top picture three, without blowing it up, it looks like Connor from Hands of Fate. And then image four is the second lead that I was telling you about. Four and five is the black couple that I was talking about that just have such a good storyline in this thing. And then
I can see what you mean about Coronado too. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Ben Andrews is kind of the father-ish, only because the guy's got slick back hair. But, oh, my God, he comes out at the top of the second act singing, and he sounds like every other 80s hair band, late 70s, 80s hair band. He is Dokken. He is Ronnie James Dio. Oh, man, his pipes were shivers. And at one point, I don't even know why. I mean, it was the music, it was the staging, it was everything, but it just broke down. And Jen's just kind of like, are you okay? I'm like, this is that moment. The only other time I've come close to feeling something like this was that moment recording that bit for Hands of Fate at Gen Con when the entire crowd was cheering for Connor when he's saying, we got the apple and we need this, and we got all those people to cheer that hair on the back.
I wasn't invited to that, so.
I thought you were there with me. No, you helped send me the phone for that. That's why you are so prevalent in my mind Is it because
I got dicked out of that one?
Yeah.
Which is kind of bullshit because I was the only Legacy member that wasn't there.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Fucking who cares?
Yeah,
a little bit.
A little bit. But yeah, they've got videos. They've got videos on the site. I haven't looked at that. I just found the site when we were doing this. So anyway, yeah, that was just an amazing night. Sorry, everybody. I hit the springs on my arm there. Probably transferred to the microphone.
I saw you were playing some cool guitar.
Twang. Yeah, so that was the Queen experience was amazing. I got as close to ever hearing Freddie sing as I'm going to hear. And Bat Out of Hell, the musical, is the warm embodiment and embrace of Jim Steinman I always wanted to have every time I listened. And I have owned every single Meatloaf album, even the ones that when Jim Steinman quit writing for them. But oh my God, this thing was amazing. And I will stop. But the other amazing thing that I alluded to earlier is that I started watching Legion.
Finally. All right.
And I am only 2 episodes in.
That's fine. That's fine. We can talk about just literally the first episode is all we need to talk about.
And the second.
Let's go ahead and... Well, yeah. But let's go ahead and put up a spoiler alert right now because I do want to talk about the show. So we'll try to keep this under 5 minutes. So go ahead and fast forward 5 minutes to like kind of the 41-ish minute mark if you don't want to hear any spoilers. And here's hoping that number is correct.
And hopefully we're only spoiling the first...
2 episodes.
2 episodes. Okay, good.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Don't spoil it all for me. So if you've watched past the first or second episode, it's okay. But if you haven't... In 3, 2, 1, go, Andy.
So, episode 1 is hands down the best first episode of anything I've ever seen. I think I said that before.
You did say that before. I'm not sure that I agree with you on that, but I'll tell you what. It's the best first episode forever. Me wanting to go, what the fuck is going on?
It is insanely disjointed, which is absolutely intentional.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, it's all over the map. There's a song and dance number, like a really good one.
Yeah.
A really good song and dance number in the first episode. You've got flashbacks. You've got, cinematically, it's incredible. There's this one, my favorite.
Oh my God.
Fucking, dude, there's a scene where... the main character calls his old psychiatric institution looking for his friend, Sid Barrett. Okay. And then 2 things happen. First of all, her name's Sid Barrett. Okay. Sidney Barrett, Sid Barrett. If you know anything about music from the 70s, Sid Barrett, original member of Pink Floyd. What happens? A Pink Floyd sound-alike song. It's not Dark Side of the Moon, but it's you know it's exactly what it's supposed to be. Starts playing. So this very Pink Floyd song starts playing when he asks for Sid Barrett. And 2.35 by 1 bars drop onto the screen. Panavision bars drop onto the screen. So it becomes a film all of a sudden. And it becomes this crazy 70s chase film. And that's just it. The genres are all over the place.
Yes.
Sometimes it's a quirky... I mean, the guy reminds me so much of Damian Lewis, it's fucking insane. He's Damian Lewis and Connor Marks.
Yep.
I mean, to bring up Connor Marks again, if Damian Lewis and Connor Marks had a baby, that's whatever his real name is. He's the guy who plays...
Yeah, we looked it up last week.
Yeah, he plays a dude on Downton Abbey who gets, you know... Who, spoiler alert as well, gets in a car wreck. Thomas? Is that right?
No.
Anyway, he doesn't look at all like that. He does not look like any other character he's ever played in this. He looks like Damian Lewis and Connor Marks.
Yeah.
So, incredible performances all around. Aubrey Plaza is a standout,
an
absolute standout. She's okay. She's not so different from most of her other roles. Like, she's definitely got that edge, that like detached edge to her. But holy shit, her performance is stellar.
Yeah, so. She's if normal Aubrey Plaza stuff is at like 6. She's right. An 11 here.
Yes.
It's,
yes,
it
absolutely.
Is turned up, and she is total. She is having fun. The director said, you know what? Too far is not in your vocabulary right now. Go.
Right. Right. So it's weird because everyone keeps talking about the main character as if David, right? They talk about him as if he's just this, like, ridiculously all-powerful mutant, but he's not doing anything really in the first episode or even two episodes that shows that. Now, I know a little bit about the comic books, so it's gonna get fucking nuts, so be prepared because it's gonna get crazy.
I'm sure.
But holy shit, the filming styles, the camera work, from a technical standpoint, it's like nothing I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. And the editing, and I was just just wet dreams everywhere.
Yeah, fantastic.
The phase shift, I mean, I've seen it where they do a close-up or a push-in to a character and then, like, phase shift because they can multi-layer the entire screen.
Right.
But when they were doing that weird bit when there's two characters on the screen and one of them's not. And I think, you know, phase shifting is, I'm speaking in a technical term. This is not someone phase shifting on the screen, but I think Andy knows what I'm talking about with the double stacked image. Yep. And instead of doing that effect to the whole screen, it is localized. And I think I know how they could do it, but just taking the time and having the balls to go say, yep, knock yourself out.
And from a non-spoiler standpoint, because we're over our time now, so if you're joining us again, thank you. From a non-spoiler standpoint, I think what you just said is kind of the DNA of the show.
Mm-hmm.
They go there. Wherever there is. You don't even know where there is. And they go there. Holy shit. It's... Yeah. So, without getting spoilery again, it's fantastic. Go watch Legion. Absolutely recommended. And then, you know, like Scott said, not necessarily his favorite first episode of a show ever. Absolutely my favorite first episode of a show ever. Mostly because of the technical stuff, though.
Yeah.
The editing, the camera work. They are so phenomenal. They are so not TV. They are so not FX. Like, holy shit. Like, this is HBO level or better.
HBO level or better, but if it's going to be a broadcast cable company, I would know that this was FX. This is not AMC by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, this is FX, no holes barred.
Oh, yeah, no holes barred. Like,
we buy into it. Do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, from the standpoint of what they're allowed to do, it's totally FX. From the standpoint of production quality, it's beyond FX. It's beyond Stars. It's beyond... It's at HBO or better. It's at Netflix or better. It is seriously
fan-fucking-tastic. It's like Netflix production... HBO production value, like the Westworlds and the Deadwoods and all that stuff. But it's the Netflix freedom of, you know, what Joss Whedon should have always gotten when he did a project, which was, we're going to buy into this. Go ahead and be trippy. We're going to have faith that this is going to turn into something. We trust you. Go do your thing. And boy, did they ever question.
Boy, did they ever.
Does this have, and I'm asking because of the logotype, does this have anything? Is this a precursor? I could totally be out of the entire everything, but X-Men?
It's a parallel sort of thing.
Okay.
So, because
it
Legion
just
the
looked
comic.
The O in Legion looked like the old X-Men.
Yes, that
suits.
Was intentional.
Okay,
I believe. It is definitely related. It's definitely more like a Doom Patrol for Marvel.
Okay,
and if you don't know Doom Patrol, if watching it feels like reading Doom Patrol. To be honest, like it's that kind of crazy, disjointed. Yeah, it's so nutters. I love it. I fucking love it. But he's kind of a. Well, I don't want to spoil anything because if you've read the comic, you're gonna know something right off the bat that's gonna mean spoilers. So, if you haven't read the comic, you should be able to find that out on your own. So I won't spoil that. But
okay.
yeah, it's related. It's related.
Well, as I get more episodes in, we will get more slimline like we did today, spoilerish about it. But yeah, this is an exciting one to be able to talk about because it's got a little bit of everything. And we could talk about the fun shit that's not spoilery, like the fact that there's an overhead shot scene of a grassy field surrounded by trees. This doesn't spoil anything. Yet
no.
Andy and I both saw
both.
That and said, that looks like the field we shot the artifact in.
Yes.
And
we do know. It does. It really does. Like
two kids going through.
Yeah. And I will say, like, Edwin Perez does make an appearance later in the season.
Oh, cool.
So that's cool. Yeah. And then it's shot in Vancouver. Oh my God, this is like, I cannot recommend it enough. I hope I'm not over talking it for everybody, but from a filmmaking standpoint, alone, it is a must watch, an absolute must watch. From a standpoint of not thinking your viewers are stupid, it's an absolute must watch.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tiny bit of exposition in it, like just a touch here and there, a little bit of peppering that I could have done without, but it's confusing enough to where I understand putting it in, but it's not hand-holding. There's no hand-holding in terms of if you've lost the thread, rewind, because they're
yep.
not going to come back and walk you through it again.
Yeah.
And it is, the first one especially, is a trip in terms of sort of how many places it takes you. The intent is to make you feel as disjointed as someone in a mental facility, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It's got this very 12 Monkeys thing going on.
Yeah, very much so.
So, and when the thing happens in the first episode, the big thing
mm-hmm.
happens in the first episode, and the screaming starts and everything like that, holy shit. Like, oh, it's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Which leads me go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to ask if we should get to some questions, so you go ahead.
Yes, we should get to some questions, but that led me to another thing, which, you know, the whole Connor Marks and blah, 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 and Bat Out of Hell is the fact that normally when you're watching a multimedia used in theater, it's, you know, okay, we're using this to shoot either we're projecting footage that's not live on, or we're projecting live footage and it's this one thing. Depending upon what was happening, it was either hyper real, blown out, or had 16 millimeter effects put on the video that was being shown to the audience. So the Paradise by the Dashboard Light that is going on, that is quintessentially summer of insert 70s year that you want here, it had the grainy 16 millimeter filter put over it and is projected that way. So the feel of what they're trying to do, this hyper reality, so all of your whites are a little bit more blown out on all the various monitors that were around or screens that you're watching. And sometimes it was tailored for the screen versus the projection screen versus the monitors. And yeah, just another one of those layers that watching Legion and then watching this, it's really weird how both are pushing boundaries of their respective mediums. But yeah, that was another thing that I wanted to quickly mention that just blew me away, was the fact that not only were they using video in a theater production, they were also tailoring it so that the look and feel was different depending upon the setting. And it was amazing. But yes, we should get to some questions, and I believe you have the first one.
Yes. So Casey Lee asks, question: if the S in Brian's name stands for hope, what does the C in Scott's name stand for? Well, you know the real answer for that if you've listened to the podcast, because we've actually talked about it. But assuming you haven't, I think the C in Scott C. Brown's name stands mostly for choke, in that all of his favorite teams seem to do that. I'm not saying Scott's like a curse, which maybe is what the C also stands for. Ooh. But I'm just saying, you know, we have not had a lot of good postseason for Seattle recently.
And, no.
I'm just saying Scott chokes Brown.
See, and I would say that without the C alliteration, where S stands for hope on Kal-El's home planet, I would say that the C has a place in the name that it should stand for. But I think if you look at our new logo, the C clearly stands for Scotch.
That's a good point. You know what?
Scotch Brown.
I'm going to, yeah, in Kryptonian, C means Scotch. So I'm going to go ahead and change my answer to what he said.
It's just hopeful. Our other question, and we're going to get this podcast done in under an hour, I swear to God.
Maybe.
The next question comes from Rob McLennan, the ever-dutiful Rob. He says, been binge-watching a little MST3K lately. Manos, Hands of Fate. Seriously, I hope these guys never worked again. Do you guys have any really old movies that you actually like? You already know my answer. I don't remember Rob's answer. I'm guessing it's not Manos, Hands of Fate. And I know that we...
They did work again, by the way.
Yeah, they did.
Well, kind of. And the guy who played the master just died like a year ago, I think, which is really sad. They were trying to restore it.
Oh, right, right.
They were working with a Kickstarter to try and restore it, and then they were going to do a sequel about the master. So I thoroughly enjoy Manos, the Hands of Fate for one reason and one reason only, the MST3K episode that it created. So I will not poo-poo that at all. I'm glad it exists. Do you want to go for old movies first, or I can, because I can answer that one too. I've got a lot that I love.
Yeah, I just think for me, it just goes back to all the old Paramount monster movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are.
Yeah, for sure. Honestly, Casablanca, Maltese Falcon, they are considered classics for a reason. They are very, very good films. A lot of Japanese cinema, a lot of Kurosawa. The reason we have Star Wars is because a young George Lucas watched Kurosawa movies. The reason we have most of the Westerns that we have from the 70s are because of Kurosawa movies. So there are tons of amazing, amazing older Japanese films as well. But ultimately, I mean, a really, really good film is a really, really good film. And there, the problem was that a lot of the studios back in those days tended to make dialogue fake. They tended to do the transatlantic dialect. They tended to do, you know, high talking, high, you know, or high pants, fast talking kind of thing. And so it made them almost silly. But if you look at real, like really deep films from that time, yeah, I mean, there are some absolutely great ones. And I don't think that, obviously Manos and anything that's going to end up on MST3K, anything that is public domain is probably not going to be as well executed. But I would argue that, you know, Night of the Living Dead is from that same era, and it's fantastic. And it's public domain, too, because of a mistake. So, yeah, there are tons of great old films.
Oh, yes.
So, do you have any favorites, Scott?
No, I mean, just the ones that we've talked about. I mean, when I think of Manos, Hands of Fate, I think B-movies, and when I think B-movies, I just go back to, you know, Werewolf, Creature from the Black Lagoon, the Bela Lugosi Draculas, Boris Karloff Frankenstein, those original ones, those, I could watch those forever and ever, over and over again. Yeah.
Cool. So Boet from the wonderful Clinically Inane podcast, which you should also be listening to, who is at Self Antagonist on Twitter, writes, when is the only person I know I have had talked about the same time with the other end, but she was not a bad thing, but she is? That's a really important and interesting question. You know, I'm not going to lie. It keeps me up at night sometimes thinking about this. But overall, I would have to say the definitive answer, for me anyway, Scott, you can stop me if you feel I'm wrong on this, is 12.
No, I believe that's the correct answer.
Yeah. I mean, you don't think she be, but she do. So yeah, there it is.
For sure.
Yeah. So... I guess we actually close this one out early, and if we can get this under 3 minutes, we might have a podcast that is not an hour. That's going to be awesome.
That'll be, yeah, or right at an hour.
Yeah, so huge thank you to our Patreon backers.
Yes.
Mark Robinson.
Leslie Sedlak.
Jay Blanken.
Rob McLennan.
Zombie Orpheus Entertainment.
James Peters.
Gordon D. Duke.
Digby Davis, LLC.
Ah, a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Yokona Tahashi.
Dougie Sharp.
Todd McKimmy.
Amanda Cook.
Lada Jerv.
Tom Brophy.
Laura Adams.
James Herbert.
Adam Morey.
Tim Martin.
Paula Moran.
Brad Roberts.
Jennifer Reifenberry.
And Rival Gal. I mean, Guy.
Oh.
Sorry, I was trying to be gender inspecific.
There you go. Neil deGrasse, if you're listening, and you're not, and you want to go to see the Bat Out of Hell musical, but you're a little concerned, come to us. We'll talk you through it, man. It's tough theater, but we think you can hack it.
Yes.
We think you can side hack it.